This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to Sunday Groove. This is episode 14, unless I got lost somewhere along the way. This is going to be kind of an impromptu episode. I still think it should be a lot of fun, but it's one that I think, I don't know if I promised what I was going to do last time. But anyway, let me not get lost in the weeds at all. Several things have happened since last time I did the show, and just kind of wanted to talk about some stuff that I've been excited about, stuff I've been feeling, and some music that's kind of, I don't know, inspired me and just made me passionate about some new stuff. So I have someone you might remember from, I think, the last two shows. Andy Helene from Survey Says is back for a third visit. Thank you for being back, Andy.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Of course. As I said off air, I really do appreciate coming back in for another episode. I've been all on and off with inspiration lately, but I kind of got super inspired last weekend. I did went to a concert, which was something I'd been wanting to do for a while. Kind of reinvigorated me, really re-excited me about everything. So last weekend I got to go to Atlanta and see Lights and Young the Giant perform at a pretty new venue called the Roxy, and it was super, super exciting to go to. It's the first concert I've been to in about 2 years, so that might be a little part of it, but it was just nice and different, which is something I've been wanting to do for a while, is to go to a different type of show. I typically go to a lot of the hard rocking shows. I know you do all kinds of shows, don't you?
Yeah, okay. Like last night I saw Ghost, and tonight I'm seeing a band called Here Come the Mummies.
Oh, cool.
And they're kind of like a funk rock group. There's a lot of horns involved with that one, and it's just pretty fun. Pretty fun music.
Nice. Yeah, I just realized like several years ago, like mostly what I was going to was hard rock, and I'm like, well, I love that, and I still want to do those shows. I kind of want to venture outside that, because still one of my favorite shows was from 5 years ago when I saw just kind of stripped down sets. Like the opener was just acoustic or just solo on his banjo or whatever he chose to play on each song. And then that was where I first heard of Lindy Ortega, and it was just her on guitar, a dude on electric guitar, and then a drummer. So it was just like really intimate, like 150 people or less venue kind of thing. So that was so fun to kind of venture outside my norm, and that was kind of what this was as well, just something outside my normal. People, if you hadn't heard of Lights, she is a Canadian singer-songwriter. She started, I think, around 2009 or so, just doing everything like on kind of a small studio slash her computer. So it's a lot more electronic, and I think she was doing a lot of drum looping and stuff like that on her computer. Then she kind of came back and did another album, which I know she had a label with, Siberia, which was really good. Then even more production and stuff came in on Little Machines a couple years ago, and she's currently on a really cool album that just came out in, I think, late 2017 called Skin and Earth. It's a concept album that she actually wrote a comic book and illustrated a comic book to go along with. So anyway, combine two things I love, and that really excited me too. So I last weekend at the show, I bought the vinyl, bought the album, and I bought the graphic novel. I hadn't had a chance to read it yet, but anyway, that's in the weeds. That's not exactly what my point was. My point was, she's very energetic and very good live performance, and I was very happy to see she tours with the band, and it was just really, really fun stuff. And like I said, it was good to kind of get away from just my hard rock. Let me see. I made a few notes. It was cool that she got to play all play 10 songs, which is good for an opening band. A lot of times you don't get that many. And even though there were some drum loops and stuff used occasionally, there was still a live drummer played along and accented stuff and got to rock out pretty well on some stuff too. But I was going to say, if you check out, most likely the intro song for this episode is going to be one of her songs. So that will be an example of one of the more energetic, kind of probably a little bit electric, electronic songs. But I want to say, if you want to check out something a little different, and if you're kind of on the fence about this whole electronic scene, check out either Same Sea, Follow You Down, or Don't Go Home Without Me. Any of those, if you check it out from Midnight Machines, they're stripped down versions of just like acoustic and like violin and stuff like that. Those kind of natural strings. And it's just gorgeous, gorgeous songs, and kind of accents her vocals even better, because she does have some really good vocals that sometimes get hidden behind some of the electronic stuff. Not really live, but if maybe on the album, you might not recognize it as much. So anyway, that was really cool to see. My friend Chris got me to tag along. It was kind of his trip, kind of his something he planned out, because he's been a huge fan of her for a lot of years, and he's been playing stuff for a long time for me of hers, and I liked it, but it just wasn't something I'd dove into until very, very recently. But definitely want to give a shout-out to her. The other one was, and sorry, I know I'm talking a lot. Actually, no, I'm going to flip to you for a second. I know you said you saw a ghost last night, and you're seeing the Here Come the Mummies tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
But you saw Tremonti not too long ago, didn't you?
Yeah, about maybe 3 weeks ago.
Okay. How was that?
It was actually really good. Like, it kind of sucked. There was like nobody there, but, the band was really awesome, and they just kind of plowed through song after song after song, and they did something that was kind of neat, where I really wasn't going to try to buy any kind of merchandise anymore, because I've already spent a bunch on like new CDs and albums and stuff, but I hadn't got the Tremonti one yet, and some kid at the show behind me, he was saying that if you buy anything from the merch table, you'll get a wristband, and then after they're set, you can go meet them. And I was like, I guess I'll splurge.
Right.
So I did it, and I bought the vinyl, and then I got the band members to sign it.
Nice. So,
pretty neat.
I'm so glad he's still doing that. That's what he's done the two times I've seen him.
Cool.
That if you buy any piece of merch, you get to meet him. I mean, and that's a heck of a deal, because, I mean, that can range anywhere as low as 10 if you just buy the CD. And I think that's what I did for one of them. I can't remember what I did for the last one. But I hadn't caught him on this tour cycle. So did he play mostly stuff from Dying Machine, or did he play stuff from the early albums as well?
He played quite a bit from the new one, and then a few from each of the other ones.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, I was wondering how he would change his set list, because I know the first time I saw him was just on the All I was all he had out, his first solo album. Then I saw him on the Cauterize tour, so it was just those two albums. And so I've been curious, because he's had two since then, Dust and then Dying Machine, just came out like May-ish, I think.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
I actually had a ticket, or actually two tickets, in fact, to go see him. Before, I think, on that Cauterize tour. Mm-hmm. He was in Chicago on a Friday, and then a Sunday somewhere closer, like an hour away. But I had, like, actually, like, I think I had like 4 or 5 other shows in that week span, and I just was so exhausted I didn't end up going to either. And I was like, I felt stupid buying tickets in advance for something and then not going. But I don't know. It's like I bit off more than I could chew, going to like maybe a show every day for like a week straight.
Yeah, as much as I love music, I don't know if I could make that happen. Sounds fun in theory, but it probably would be. Was there a lot of travel involved for each of the shows?
Yeah, because like that one in Chicago, I had actually saw something on a Thursday night. The night before in St. Louis with a couple buddies, and we went to St. Louis on a Thursday, so I ended up working like a half day. Then I went there, and I think I worked the full next day on Friday. And after being on my feet all day, I was just like, I don't feel like going to stand at a show and then actually driving there and then back. So I have like a 2.5-hour drive. So, but then the thing was, is that Monday I saw Slash and Miles back up in Chicago. And I'm like, that's the one I really want to go to. These other shows are only like, I think they're only $15 for a ticket. Whereas it was like $40 for Slash. So I'm like, that's the one that's like a bigger value, I guess.
Right, right.
But, yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah, I've been meaning to ask you. I know you told me about the being a smaller show and not a ton of people at the Tremonti one, but I hadn't really. And I know you got a good spot like right there at the front. But yeah. Other than that, we really hadn't talked about it. So I was curious to hear your thoughts on it.
I feel like I just blew all my rock cred now, though, saying, man, I skipped out on some shows. And then...
Well, I'm hoping I'm not blowing my rock cred by talking about more poppy stuff, but one thing, I think, I'm sure I've said it on the show, I know I have a little bit, my show is all about being positive and just exploring all kinds of different music. I don't believe in, I mean, I might call them that occasionally, like guilty pleasures or anything. Not that anything I talk on this episode's that. But, like, you know, you enjoy what you enjoy, and whatever connects with you connects with you. And as far as, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. If you're tired and having a rough week, it can be kind of tough to make it to everything. So, no, I don't think that blows any rock cred. But speaking of stuff,
I was gonna ask you about that lights. So she has a comic book. Was it like a concept album that she did, and it tied into the comic book?
That's what it says. You can appreciate the album on its own, which is what I've done. But I know when I opened the graphic novel, it's I think 6 issues in the trade. Like it has a track list, like, and it coordinates like certain tracks with each chapter. So I'm sure I'm going to appreciate it even more once I read the novel. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I know she's always been into drawing, like her early music videos. She did a lot of some of her artwork would be in it, especially the lower budget ones. Because like in the early days, I mean, I could tell it was really a shoestring budget, which it was still great. But it's changed a lot over the years. But yeah, like, you know, a lot of people, well, I guess a lot of people know, I love comic books. I've been on Hearts of Heaven fanboy several times, like just to talk about comic book related things. It's one of my other loves. It's not nearly as high up as music, but it's still something I'm really passionate about. So something I really look forward to looking into, but I hadn't gotten a chance yet. But yeah, I thought that was really cool because I think I'd been told that, but had forgotten that some of the tracks would coordinate with different chapters. I'm a little bummed out. We didn't realize until after, like, the day after the show or 2 days after the show, that if we'd gotten to town earlier, we could have actually done a meet and greet for free at the at a comic shop.
Oh wow!
Yeah, we didn't realize that. She was doing that at the tour, so she wasn't doing meet and greets at the show, but she was doing them earlier in the day at a comic shop. So anyway, you live, you learn. Got to check social media more.
It sounds like how bands used to do, like, when they were coming to town, they would do signings at record shops. Well, she's doing it at a comic book shop, kind of like almost like to cross promote.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she wanted to cross promote, and I think she just wanted to meet a lot of her fans, and especially the ones that were wanting to read. And I mean, I know she took pictures with people a lot too, so that would have been pretty cool. But yeah, definitely. I encourage people to check her out. But something else I enjoyed a lot, sometimes it's just fun to have fun music and just stuff you can dance along with. And that is definitely what the headliner of the show was. Young the Giant. I remember getting pretty big into them. I don't honestly remember what year. I know their first album came out in 2010. I probably heard it in 11 or 12. I just don't feel like I heard it immediately when it came out. But they had a lot of big hits with My Body and... isn't it My Body or Your Body? Crap, I'm a bad fan. And then Cough Syrup, I thought that was the biggest one. That was the one I heard all the time on our one alt-rock station, somewhat close. But anyway, they put on an incredible show, just very energetic, and that lead singer has one of the best live voices I've heard. Like, he can reproduce everything from the album perfectly vocally. And something that had helped me appreciate their stuff before was I'd seen some of their more stripped-down sets that they used to put on their website. I'm sure they're on YouTube. And he referred to them as in the open sets. So apparently that's what they call them. So they're probably on YouTube. So, but they incorporated that into the show a little bit as well. So like it started out high energy, pop rock and everything. And then by episode eight, eighth song. Wow. They did the in the open version of two songs. One from the first album, one for the second one. It was Strings and Firelight. And it was just really gorgeous to hear more acoustic arrangements and just really more mellow things before they brought it back up. And yes, I was right. It is My Body. That just feels weird. I guess I was thinking of John Mayer, Your Body is a Wonderland. So I was wanting to make it Your Body. Not Andy's body. But anyway... if you've never seen them, I strongly urge you to. Like I've already said, he has an amazing voice, but he's got so much energy. That dude is constantly dancing and playing auxiliary percussion. Like he plays cowbell, he plays tambourine. There was something else I couldn't really tell what it was from the back because we were further back for him. We got really close for lights, and then we took a break, went to the merch table, and... I just wasn't feeling getting in the crazy crowd because we were on the floor and it was packed. So we just got somewhere where we could see the stage really well, but not be annoyed by people bumping into us constantly because it was definitely a lot of people were partying pretty hard. So there was a lot of people bumping into everybody and everything and wasn't really feeling that. So, but it one thing that was cool was, I mean, the crowd dances. They really enjoy it, so we were able to do that. Just not quite as up close as some of the people were. But yeah, I forgot one of my friends had seen him before and had talked about him dancing, but they even kind of did an electric slide, like the entire band, during one of the songs, which was really cool. I've just never seen somebody really, I don't know, do all that during a rock show, because I mean, it's pop, more pop rock, alt rock, indie rock, but it's still rock. But I also have to comment. It was a Halloween weekend or the weekend leading into it, so there are a ton of people in costumes. So if you ever wanted to see Teletubbies dance to a song or unicorns or Napoleon Dynamite, you got to see that this show, so that it was a lot of fun. That was probably equally fun, was just people watching and seeing all the craziness there.
So did you dress up?
No, I didn't even cross my mind. I am such a hot-natured individual. I'm always trying to dress as lightweight as I can for shows just because I don't want to be miserable.
Yeah, that might be kind of hot, yeah, dancing in a costume.
Well, you would think, but this place, they must have really air-conditioned it beforehand. I know it was a cold night, but still, that many people, I would think it would have gotten pretty hot in there. But it really, I could have worn a little bit more. Like, I would have been fine. I was in just a t-shirt and jeans, but I wasn't cold, but I definitely was far from hot. But it I didn't even think of it. And one cool thing about the venue, they have a coat check. I have never seen a coat check at a venue before, but they do.
Huh, like they do that. Like I've only seen it here at this one in Peoria. The Monarch, it's like a fairly new venue like around here, but they have that too. It's like they renovated some old like warehouse and they have a coat check.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think this place has been around a year or two, so I guess, and you can tell it's a little bit more upscale than some places I've been, but it's definitely not like crazy fancy. It was still modest enough priced. But I thought that was a really cool thing they got to do. But I wanted to throw a little love the new album. I'm more talking about the experience, but the new album is called Mirror Master. It literally just dropped within the last 2 weeks. Really fun. If you're looking for good hooks and amazing fun bass grooves, definitely check the album out. Like the whole album is fun. Well, I think there's like a few that are more a little mellow, which I mean, it's still fun, but they have like, it's just a very energetic album. Superposition, Heat of the Summer, Tightrope, and can I read my writing? Oh, Simplify. are all just really fun. There's also some other ones, Call Me Back, and that's the only ones I can. Oh, and Mirror Master. Those are all just fun. It's gonna be like three different bands I'm naming off, but some parts vocally just give me a U2 feel, and I can't really explain that other than just that's what it makes me feel. But it also reminds me a little bit of Coldplay's Milo Zaloto from several years ago. Mixed with a little bit of Maroon 5, just the danciness of some of it. So I'm probably not doing a good job selling it to hardcore rock fans, but I encourage you to check out something out there because, like I said, vocally, he's a really good vocalist. And like I said, sometimes it's just nice to kind of break out of your comfort zone and try something new. And it's really cool. I mean, they're already to their fourth album and they've been around, I mean, kind of big time, maybe 8 years. I think they kind of hit it really big with the first album and then it's kind of been diminishing returns on the follow-up albums. I think their fan base, it might be growing, but as far as like radio is what I'm talking about. Do they play on any stations you hear, Andy?
I think our rock station was adding a few alternative songs. And I think they had a song, It's About Time. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of their songs. I can't remember if that's the name of the song or if that's just one of the words. Let me see.
Yeah, like it might be in the chorus.
Right. I don't
know if it's the title or not.
I think that was on their second album is what I'm thinking, if I can pull up. Come on, phone. Don't run so slow.
It had a good hook to the song, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that is the title of a track off Mind Never Matter. It just wasn't played at my show. Yeah, it was a really good one. I'm actually shocked it wasn't played at my show. But anyway, I was really excited about the show. Wanted to talk about it a little bit. As I always like to talk about new music, and like I said, both I would consider Lights and Young the Giant just to be a good part to put into my... This is sort of like a current spins, sort of just kind of like a experiences, recent experiences. Are there any other albums you're excited about or that you've listened to lately or any other shows?
Well, one of my current spins, we're going to be talking about it later.
Okay. So, yeah.
I'll just save that for later, put it off to the side. Well, there's one thing, like, I won't totally dive into it, but my current spins have, I guess, blown up, because the last couple of months, I wanted to run through all of the 500 albums on the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums list.
Okay.
And so I've been trying to do, like, one a day since the end of August, and I kind of fell behind the last 2 weeks or the last month or something, because there was I started slowly falling behind, and then I realized how far behind I was, because I wanted to do one a day. And there was something where they did Merle Haggard. It was like 100 song greatest hits. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to fit that into a day? Because
yeah,
I didn't want to just have all these albums as like background music. That would just be too easy to just be at work and just have it on in the background. I wanted to kind of focus on it a little bit. So I try to listen to them like when I'm at home, but that one was just 100 songs. It's hard to, you know, actually devote that much time to do it in one sitting.
That wasn't all Bob Merle Haggard, was it?
Yeah, it was like a 30-year retrospective, which...
Oh, wow. Okay.
Kind of bothered me at first because I thought it should be albums, like a single album. But then they're throwing on like a four-disc box set in there for one person. And I was going back and forth with the guy at work. I'm like, it should be albums. There shouldn't be live albums. There shouldn't be greatest hits. There shouldn't be box sets. And he's just like, well, maybe they just like made an entry for Merle Haggard and said, okay, check out Merle Haggard. And I'm like, yeah, but then they've got every Bob Dylan album and every Beatles album on there. They couldn't just do a couple. I don't know.
So did you enjoy any of his stuff?
I actually did kind of like it. A lot of them sounded the same, but there was, I actually did like a bunch of it. But it was just, like I said, hard to, kind of even totally focus on all those. So some of them kind of just, I guess, blended together after a while, but
right,
I did,
right.
I'd say I probably gained like a bigger appreciation for the guy. Cause yeah, he's old country crooner and I didn't know anything about him before I listened to it.
Right, yeah, he's one of those who kind of falls in the outlaw country as well, and he just kind of did his own thing, and I know he's got some that are almost like funky country songs, some of his 70s stuff, or at least that's what I would consider it. I know Greg's pointed out some very interesting songs by him over the years that I never would have heard otherwise, because I grew up listening to 90s country originally before I got so heavy into rock and roll, and I really haven't spent tons of time diving back into the earlier years of country other than just like while I'm playing Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto, I think it was 4, it was 5, had a country station that I loved to put on while I was running around doing the things you do in Grand Theft Auto. It just seemed to fit one of the characters really well. Have you ever played Grand Theft Auto 5, Andy?
No, I think... I've only played one Grand Theft Auto game, maybe the first or second one, where it was like the bird's eye view of the thing.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
All yeah. I remember is when you got into a different car, it would play like a different song. Like you got in a pickup truck and it was kind of twangy.
Right.
You got in a sports car and it was like, you know, like a rock and roll song or something.
Yeah, they've changed a ton over the years, and now they have like all these different stations, but the last one they had three different characters that you float back and forth between, and there was this one like rednecky character that I felt like I had to listen to like really hard rock or country whenever I was playing with him. So I would put it on that, and I found this classic country station. Sorry, I know I'm giving into stereotypes there, but it's what I did, and it helped me.
You're
going to
say there's a lot of like Kid Rock or something.
It'd work. But yeah, it was a lot of what they had, the classic country station, so it got me to appreciate like some old Johnny Cash and, oh gosh, I cannot remember this other dude's name. Johnny Paycheck. And some other stuff like that. So anyway, well, cool. I'm always glad to hear of different stuff, different music, whether it's old or new. But I wanted to give a little shout out real quick to a show, actually, which is a very different thing. Not a concert, but a show on Hulu called Sound Breaking. Stories from... Crap, the subtitle turns off for some stupid reason. Songs from the studio or songs from recording. Anyway, if you type in Sound Breaking, you'll find it. It's on Hulu. It came out a couple years ago, and it's been on my list forever, and I just forgot about it. But I was doing a thing where I was trying to just watch stuff that's been on my queue forever, and so that's what I did. And this is a really cool series, especially the first few episodes. It's 8 episodes about different things involving music, and... Thought it was going to show the full name again, but it still didn't. But the episodes, it goes through different things involving music. The first one was about early days of recording. Okay, sorry, my controller is acting up and I'm not looking at it right. Okay, here we go. I'd gotten away from the list. The art of recording... painting with sound, and there's one that's just completely about voices and how it was recorded and stuff. So it's called the Human Instrument. Then about old school music when they first started getting the electric guitar. There's one about dance, more like dance music, funk. There's an R&B episode. Just all kinds of stuff. It was really cool. I talked about the early days of synthesizers in one of the episodes. Just really cool. I'm someone that's always loved not just listening to music, but seeing how it's made. And that show does a really good job interviewing a bunch of different people, showing some old footage. I know it showed some old footage of Stevie Wonder, not only playing the keyboard and synthesizers and stuff, but also playing drums. Just really, it's a good mixture of stuff. I really encourage people to go out and check that out, because if you enjoy any behind-the-scenes stuff, you'll more than likely at least like the earlier ones. The last two episodes I didn't enjoy quite as much, but still was fun. One was kind of more like the MTV generation, which a lot of that I lived through, so it wasn't as informative as a lot of the stuff.
So this is like an hour-long like documentary series on Hulu?
Yes. Pretty much around an hour. All of them are like 50-something minutes, yeah.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's on there. Hopefully it'll be on there for a while. I think it was a Hulu original. If not, it's just been on there for a while. But I always like to support things like that because, now when I zoom completely out to the home menu, I could see it. Sound breaking stories from the cutting edge of recorded music. But yeah, I just want to go through stuff that had been on my queue forever, and I wanted to check it out, and I got hooked, and I literally went through the whole series in less than a week. Just because I thought it was so cool, and it really just got me excited about all kinds of different music, and had me going to check out all these different artists, which is something I love. Did you ever see Sound City?
I've wanted to, like the Dave Grohl documentary thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there was a soundtrack for that too, with like Stevie Nicks and I think Corey Taylor
Taylor, Trent Reznor, the drummer and the bassist from Rage Against the Machine. Just all kinds of different people collaborated with them for it. But the documentary was part of what got me into Fleetwood Mac, actually.
Oh, nice.
They record a bunch at Sound City, especially before Fleetwood Mac, Stevie and Lindsay. They did a lot of recording there. That was kind of the reason why I got into Tom Petty and Fleetwood Mac so much several years ago, was because of that documentary. So I always love documentaries for that reason, especially music ones, because it just encourages me or lets me know about a singer I might not have, some that I hadn't heard of and some that I just didn't know much about. But that's a really good one that I encourage anybody to check out. But anyway, I didn't mean to go on quite that long about those things, but those are just some things I was excited about. So that was kind of I'm just going to call it current events / current music, current spins. So the coup de grace, the topic of the show, we're going to go through maybe a little faster than some of the previous episodes. I'm trying to maybe do a little something different and maybe episodes a little shorter because I feel maybe some people aren't in for long-winded things that I'm known for. I'm going to try. Who knows what will happen. But anyway, we talked about doing a Slash episode because he's an amazing guitarist and he's collaborated with one of our favorite singers. Are you still there, Andy?
Oh, yeah.
Thought it was cutting.
I'm here.
It sounded weird for some reason. I don't know what that was. But yeah, Slash, he's been coordinating with one of our favorite singers for a while now. So felt time to kind of give a little bit more time to talk about Slash and his solo career. Andy, I'm going to actually let you lead, if you don't mind, on the first album. Came out in 2010, I know that much. And the biggest thing, without pulling it up real quick, was that he kind of took this Carlos Santana approach and got a lot of different vocalists to come collaborate for that album.
I was even thinking I forgot about the Santana collaborations, but I was thinking of like Tony Iommi, because he had one that came out where he was playing and he had a different vocalist on each song. And I guess it's kind of a good segue because going back to that first Slash album, he had Ian Astbury from the Cult, and he was also Tony Iommi one too. And I was thinking, man, that guy's like, he's a good go-to for these albums.
Oh, that's cool.
I think he leads off the album too with that Ghost song.
That sounds right. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I finally got it pulled up. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just grew up with the Carlos Santana, the one where he collaborated with Rob Thomas and did Smooth. That was such a huge hit for so long. And I was such a huge Matchbox 20 fan back then that I loved that song. I know he's not the only one that's ever done that, but...
Yeah, it's still a good album. Like, I like that song, too, that Smooth song.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this album, it's got a lot of different collaborations. Ozzy gets on a song. Fergie, of all people, shows up on our song, and it's actually a pretty good rock song, I thought. Chris Cornell for a song called The Promise, or just Promise. Andrew Stockdale from Wolfmother did By the Sword. Adam Levine from Maroon 5. Wow, I'd forgotten that one.
Yeah, because I didn't get that album like right away when it first came out. I was super into Velvet Revolver, but I guess Slash kind of fell off my radar when that band ended, and so I didn't know he was working on anything until I had started working at this printing company like late at night, and these guys that ran the printing press, they had a big like iTunes library, and I guess they just like shuffle through a lot of stuff, and there was a Slash album on there. And it had that Fergie song, and so it's kind of funny because that's like I always think about that job when I hear that song because that was one of their go-to songs, isn't it? I think it's Beautiful Dangerous.
Yes.
is the name of the song. And so, yeah, I always think about those guys when I hear that song. And it's so I went out and bought that maybe 2012, so it had already been out a while by the time I came. I think he was actually working with Miles, and he was about to put out that one at the time when I kind of jumped aboard.
Yeah, it's really cool. I watched an interview a long time back, so I don't remember it very well, where Slash had talked about kind of the collaboration with Miles. But I definitely know he had to have hit it off really well on this recording because he did two songs. Everybody else just did one, but there were actually two Miles Kennedy songs on this Slash album. And the funny thing is both of them were like the furthest thing from the primary sound that they would do on their follow-up albums, especially the next one in line, which is way more metal. But you got Back from Cali, which kind of gives me like a Led Zeppelin vibe a little bit. Not the heavier Led Zeppelin, but it just sounded something with the guitar work.
It's weird. Like, when I heard that album, those were, like, two... Like, I really liked Miles from the Alter Bridge and that, but I didn't like those two that he did on the album. But then I saw him live, and I actually kind of appreciated him a little bit more, but it's like, it was, like, weird how... Maybe I had, like, too high of expectations, because I was like, hey, man, there's two songs with Miles. These got to be good.
Well, you also might have been expecting more of the hard rocking of Alter Bridge to carry over into that, and these couldn't be further from that style.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it could be further if they'd done like
expectations or something versus, you know, I just needed to kind of go in.
Right.
More open-minded, I guess.
Well, they definitely shocked me, but I loved it because it was so different. And Starlight, the other one, oh my gosh, like just really shows off Miles' range that I always love. Because I won't even attempt, but he hit some ridiculously high notes on there. But are there any other tracks from it that stand out to you a lot?
Yeah, it's like, I guess I was really into this album when I first bought it. But I kind of drifted away from it because I guess it's so much easier to just listen to the stuff with Miles because they've got now, as of this year, they've got three albums, and then there's two live albums together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're currently touring with that, so it's easier to just go back to the Slash and Miles stuff. But so I don't think I'd listened to just the Slash album until I think I hadn't listened to it in like a good 2 or 3 years, and until yesterday, and I was like, holy cow, I really like a lot more on here than I thought I did too, because I pulled it up on Apple Music, and there must be a couple extra songs on there that I didn't think were on the CD. There's something with some lady called, her name's Beth Hart, and the song is Mother Maria, and I think that might be the best one on the album, and I don't think it was on the CD. It must just be some iTunes extra song.
It's got to be. It's not showing up. I'm looking at it on Amazon. What was it called again? Mother Maria?
Yeah, and I only know of Beth Hart because I listened to some Bonamassa before, and I think she's like done some live albums with him, like on a few songs. So I was familiar with her name, but the song is—it's kind of like a country song, but it's not like, you know, it's not more modern country like what you think of.
Right. It's no Red Solo Cup.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. That's my go-to of making fun of modern company, modern country. I just that song infuriates me.
but yeah, there's a lot on that album. Like I really liked Andrew Stockdale, the guy from Wolfmother.
Yeah. That one's incredible. I love his voice anyway. And it was really cool to hear a different side of him, because it's still his, you know, it's his voice, but it doesn't sound like a Wolfmother song. If memory serves, it's pretty heavy, isn't it?
It kind of starts off slow, but then it kind of picks up.
It's right, one of those, right.
That kind of builds. But then the weird thing too is going back to this album after so long is that when they're touring with Miles, they do some of those songs. They'll do. At least, I think, they've done Promise, because that was on a live album, which is actually, it was my favorite one, the Chris Cornell song.
Mm-hmm.
It was my favorite until this Mother Maria song. Now I don't know which is my favorite, but he's done at least like 3 or 4 of those live with Miles, and so hearing them on the album, I was actually so used to hearing Miles that I was just kind of thrown off that it... It wasn't him singing, because I think even that Ian Astbury song, they've done that one on tour.
Yeah, from what I understand and what I've seen of some footage and stuff, like when they were touring this album, even though we collaborated with a bunch of people, it wouldn't have been cost effective to try to tour with a lot of those people. So he'd hit it off well with Miles. Miles had some time, and so he just took him on the road. And with Miles and his versatility, he just, you know, covered a lot of these other songs and then started covering some Guns N' Roses stuff on that tour. And I really think that's when their creativity together started flowing, and that's why they later got back together for an entire album.
Have you, so you haven't seen Slash and Miles live, but have you listened to either of the live albums?
Not all the way through. I've listened to a lot of stuff on YouTube. I keep meaning to buy one of those albums, or one of the Blu-rays. There's one that, Made in Stoke that I keep meaning to buy. I haven't bought it yet, but it's been on my list on Amazon for a while now, so I'll eventually get around to it.
Yeah, that's one I kind of actually stumbled upon. There's like a good friend of mine, his name's Bob. He owns a record store kind of about 40 minutes away from here.
Mm-hmm.
So usually if I was going to go to his record store like a Saturday, like I'd have a list and I'd kind of scribble some down and I'd go out there and pick stuff up, but I'd end up, he had just a huge store of like anything you could think of. So I'd end up like I'd go there for like maybe 3 things and I'd leave with like 10 things. but I stumbled upon that one, live album, Made in Stoke. And I actually got that. I think it was like right after, the Apocalyptic Love album came out. And so I was just so blown away with Miles, how he could sing the Velvet Revolver stuff, the Guns N' Roses stuff, the Slash stuff, then the Slash and Miles stuff. He could do all of that, and he just pulled it off like fantastically.
Yeah, I like I said, I haven't seen a whole show, but I've watched a lot of different clips on YouTube from different shows. So I've heard him do tons of the different songs. I'm looking on Wikipedia right now. It looks like the deluxe edition of this first album has a song also that features Alice Cooper. And if my memory serves, Nicole, what is she from? Is she one of the Pussycat Dolls? I think she is.
Oh, really? I didn't even know he did an Alice Cooper song on there.
Yeah. Let me get back to my list. I apologize for murdering her last name and just not really attempting it very well because I'm not good with a lot of names. Let's see. Yeah, it's called Baby Can't Drive.
I think I know who you're talking about because she might have sang like the national anthem at like a WrestleMania around that time too or something.
Very possible. Yeah, she was the lead singer of the Pussycat Dolls. That's what I've always remembered her. Well, I thought I remembered her correctly from. But yeah, apparently there's a lot of versions of this or just outtakes that I'm going to have to search YouTube for now because I've got to hear a lot of this. I had no clue some of this existed because I just had the version I'd heard was just, I guess, the basic edition.
Like now there's something I was going to ask you too. We were recording this cause I had wanted to kind of like, I had wanted to like remember to ask you, did he actually like sit down and like write these songs with each vocalist or did he just like write them and he's like, oh, this person might be a good fit for this like song or was it more of like a collaboration? Cause
I can't remember either. I definitely know the more recent albums, Miles writes the lyrics. I definitely know that because I had seen an interview with Slash recently because they were asking Slash about the lyrics, and he's like, you're going to have to ask Miles about that. He's like, I can't answer that. Let's see.
I was thinking maybe he sat down and like wrote these and then kind of like offered them to each like singer.
Right.
Because people have done that before, like they'll just email him a song and then they'll send back what they have and kind of go back and forth that way. But I think in the booklet or something, he had pictures of him and the different artists in the studio. So I didn't know how much of a collaboration it really was.
I really don't know. And if I ever did know, I sure don't remember.
it's been so long, so.
It has. Let's see. I was going to mention I'd forgotten and was just being reminded. Dave Grohl played drums on Watch This. It's a track that has both Dave Grohl on drums and then Duff from Guns N' Roses fame on the song as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's even one I was listening to today when I was like jogging because I had the album going too. And I had completely forgot that Iggy Pop was on a song.
Right.
It's just like all across the board. Like he's got like one with Lemmy and then, yeah, like I guess now the Pussycat Dolls and then Fergie.
Yep. And even M Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold is on. Yeah. Nothing to Say. And Kid Rock. I Hold On. It always comes back to Kid Rock. Not really doesn't, but he has been all over the place musically. Some really good.
It is all the place, but they're all like really good songs. Like it's hard to actually pick a favorite just because they're right. So strong.
Oh yeah. So that was a really cool album. Like I didn't know what to expect from the album because I remember I got the first Velvet Revolver album and got hugely into it. And I think because my one friend that was really big into them didn't like the follow-up, Russell, that I never checked out the second album, Libertad, or how do you say it? Do you know?
I think Libertad, yeah.
That probably sounds more correctly. But anyway, that second album, I'd never heard it all the way through because Russell did not like that one, so I just took his word at it and never checked back into it. So this one I just kind of dove blindly into, not really knowing what to expect.
Maybe it was the same way. The first Velvet Revolver album was just so good that the second one was kind of... It was good, but it wasn't as good. So I think it got kind of like a bad rap or something.
Well, and I also think the first one just had so much hype. Because, I mean, you get the guitarist from... actually, three of the members from Guns N' Roses, right? Wasn't it the bassist? Slash,
Matt Sorum, Slash, and Duff.
Okay. So it was just the basically the guitar and rhythm section, and then you just get Scott Wallen from Stone Temple Pilots. I mean, so it's a super group. So I remember, it's kind of funny, they came around pretty close to the same time as Audioslave.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of the time of super groups. So I wonder if sometimes, if maybe it's not even a quality statement of the second album that didn't do as well, but that maybe just the hype had died down a little bit by then. But who knows? So I guess it's probably a good time to dive into the second one, Apocalyptic Love. Unless you had anything else to say about it.
I didn't. But yeah, this is the first official Slash and Miles one.
Right. Yeah, 2012, Apocalyptic Love came out, and by that point, he was actually considered part of the band, and it was called Slash, featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. For some reason, for years, I thought it was the Co-Conspirators. That made it so much more complicated. anyway, this one's a full album with Miles. Definitely was steering more into the heavy metal that you're going to hear on a lot of it if you listen to it. And just even Miles did a different, kind of a different voice than he does in Alter Bridge. Like, it was a little, I don't even know how to describe it really well. Just more of a metal voice, at least on some of the songs. I don't know if you noticed that or remember that from it.
I've tried to get some people into it, and they say he sounds nasally.
Okay, I didn't want to say that, but that is that's exactly what turned me off on a couple tracks the first time. Is I love Miles, I still think he's one of the best vocalists, but on You're a Lie, I feel he's nasally on it. Yeah. So I really don't that one as much. Whereas I don't find that to be the case.
That was the first single, right?
Yes, that was the first single. And now I'll be honest, since you said it, I didn't want to leave with it, but since you, no, it's fine that you said it. that song turned me off to the album, like originally. That I took a little time where I didn't really listen to it and I didn't buy it right away because that song just, I don't know, wasn't what I expected vocally from him. But it's weird, like, I don't notice that on a lot of these other tracks, but that one, I don't feel as very strong lyrically, and it definitely just didn't feel like the quality of Miles' voice that you get on most of the rest of the album. Like, I don't notice that nasalness on One Last Thrill or Standing in the Sun or any of those, really.
Yeah.
I know we briefly mentioned this one or two episodes back. I know I gave out a shout out for, like, We Will Roam and what was the other one I talked about? Anastasia. I know I talked about that one in Bad Rain. I love Bad Rain.
Yeah. Same here.
So it's really cool. This one, like I said, had added him as a full member. I'm imagining he wrote the lyrics here. Miles, I'm saying, because I know he does these days, but I could be jumping wrong on that. So what about this album sticks out to you that you love?
Basically all of it.
Okay. But
when it first came out, I actually really did like You're a Lie. It just seemed like that kind of like ballsy, like rock song, kind of like a Velvet Revolver that I hadn't heard in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool to actually have something like that on the radio, too, because that was when I first heard it. It was, like I said, the first single. And so I had kind of, I guess I'd been burnt out by whatever was on the radio, you know, like Seether and Five Finger Death Right. Punch and stuff like that. So I was kind of looking for other stuff. And I think about a year before that album came out, I was drifting more into like classic rock. Like I was trying to find other things and other, like I was trying to, I guess, just expand out more than what was on the radio. And then all of a sudden the Slash album came out and I'm like, yes, that's the kind of sound that I want. Just like a straight up rock song. And so the album just like, I don't know. I just took it and ran with it. Like I fell in love with it like right away, like all the songs on there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, Bad Rain. I like that. Cause it kind of had, it's got more of like a groove to it than anything else on there.
It does. The whole album kind of like brings in some inspiration from the 80s and 90s. Like it really kind of brings in some 80s metal sound, not like the extreme long tracks and everything from the 80s necessarily, but it definitely, I don't know, it kind of brings in some of the feel. At least I hear that a little bit in the album. And it, yes, it was so different than a lot of stuff that was popular at the time, because what you were describing earlier, like, I love Seether, or a lot of Seether, but there's only so much I Hate Myself rock and roll that you could listen to.
Yeah.
And that's really a lot of what his territory is. Like, and that saddens me if Sean from Seether still feels that way. It really saddens me that he, you know, has that level of self-hatred / depression even all these years later. But I can't listen to that all day, every day. Like, that's, you got to move on. You got to find, not telling him to move on, but like, you got to find other music.
Yeah, there's like not to veer off too far onto a tangent, but I still like Shinedown because he's got kind of maybe more of like a message or something in the lyrics.
Right.
Like, I'm not into the music as much anymore because it seemed like they're almost going a little bit more electronic now.
Yeah, they not are on the new stuff.
Straight up rock, but I still go back to Shinedown a lot.
Yes. Yeah, I know Jennifer Smith on, I think it was episode 5, she mentioned that first Shinedown album, and I jumped back into it. And it's still probably their most depressing of their albums, but they do jump around musically and lyrically. Like, it's not just that kind of stuff. It's all kinds of stuff, and it's really good lyrically, I think. So yeah. It kind of, I think it's a step beyond what Seether tends to do in a lot of their stuff. Granted, I haven't listened to the new Seether album, but
it's probably the same as the last.
It felt like after their fourth one, I think it was, I stopped buying their albums because I was just like, they'll give me a little different, and the next thing I know, it's back to really depressing stuff, and I'm just like, okay, I can't do this. So,
back to the Slash album.
Yeah, though. Sorry.
I guess I would say if anybody's listening, I kind of feel this way, like, maybe some people have said, like, oh, yeah, only the first Guns N' Roses album is the best one, you know, and then they don't really like the November Rain and, like, the ballads and, you know, the Use Your Illusion as much. This one, Apocalyptic Love, sounds like it kind of picks up, like, right after the first Guns N' Roses. Yeah. It's kind of just that back to basics rock.
Right.
So
that's a good point. I didn't think about that. But yeah, it really doesn't go into a lot of the territory they did on Use Your Illusion. Are there any other tracks that, I know you said you enjoy the whole thing. Not For Me is really good. I do remember that now. Shots Fired is a good, just straight ahead rock song.
I like Standing in the Sun. I was kind of glad that was another single. Like, I wasn't even burnt out on it, because sometimes radio would do that. Like, I would, I'd get an album, and then I'd already be into it, and then by the singles, by the time they put out the next couple singles, I might have been burnt out because I'd already listened to it so much on the album before it was on the radio all the time. But I wasn't burnt out on Standing in the Sun. I thought that was a really good choice for the follow-up single, I guess.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, it looks like Your Lie was first, Standing in the Sun second, Bad Rain third, and then they finished with Anastasia the following year in 2013.
Yeah, I saw them twice on that tour, too, because they came to Peoria, actually, at the start of July, and then I saw later on, they're going to be in St. Louis, so I bought tickets for that one, too, just because I was so, like, I guess blown away by the show. I'm like, I got to go see it again. They're that close, so.
Yeah, I've got to start checking tour list again. I know the first leg, they weren't doing anywhere near me, but I've got to see if they are.
It seemed like a really short leg. Like, they only did, like, 2 weeks, and that was it.
Right. But hopefully they'll add more. Typically bands do. Just takes a while sometimes.
Yeah, and I think especially because you said you're seeing Miles again, right, on this tour?
Yes.
I think it seemed like because you already had like this tour booked, and then they booked the Slash stuff. So it's kind of like they've already had his stuff, so they only had a narrow or small window.
Yeah, they've started doing some overseas booking for the spring, but I'm not sure if they started the U.S. stuff for that. I think they had a small window to work in for this fall because of Miles finishing up his last little bit of his solo tour. But, yeah, definitely got to be on the lookout. But let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and discuss just a little bit more, two more albums of Slash. Please don't go anywhere.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Be Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Be Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceBeNation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceBeNation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebook via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Back with me for the second half, and we're going to dive right back into some Slash albums with the third Slash album, Word on Fire. That is World on Fire. Slurred my words a little bit because that's just how I talk sometimes. Came out June of 2014, or that's when the first single came out. No, the album came out September of 2014. But it was another one featuring Miles and the Conspirators. And another very strong album. I have a few notes. Shadow Life opens up the album very rockin', very energetically. And hold on, now I got the pillow list up. Okay. Sorry, Shadow Life's actually second. World on Fire opens up the album really rockin'. Shadow Life's just getting rockin'. Wicked Stone is one of my favorites off the album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the first few songs of the album? Do you enjoy them?
I went back and listened to this one just maybe an hour before we recorded.
Okay.
And, yeah, I would say Wicked Stone has always been my favorite on there, but I don't know what a Wicked Stone is. Is it like, is he talking about the planet and he wants to die? I don't know.
I just like to imagine Chris Farley shaming something. So you're a bad stone. You're a bad stone. That's just.
Oh man, I'm a little bit morbid, I guess. I mean, maybe that's what, I like your example better.
I just picture it from Tommy Boy when he's
Oh, you're my pet. You're a naughty pet.
Yes, yes, that's exactly what I was imagining. I made him more lispy, but that yes, that's exactly what I just thought of.
And then I, and you're like, oh, I killed my pet.
I've been thinking about Chris Farley a lot lately, so it's probably, he might make an appearance on a lot of my shows.
I love that scene, though.
Yeah. That was when I was sad and I realized I don't own the other day, and I was like, I'm in the mood to see it, so I'm probably just going to have to order me a copy soon, because it's not streaming anywhere, not that I saw. But anyway, sorry, back to Slash. Wicked Stone's great. I cannot remember. Sadly, my notes kind of suck. I just thought I was going to trigger more, but it didn't at the moment.
I think to me, though, this album, it kind of suffers the same as like the Velvet Revolver album, where the first one was just so awesome that the second one, it had to follow that album. And I'm not saying World on Fire is bad at all. Like, there's a lot of good songs, but I think I'm way too attached to the Apocalyptic Love, that, you know, it kind of overshadows this one.
Well, also seeing him on tour twice for that one probably built up some fire around it and your excitement as well, because I know seeing stuff live can make you more attached to stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think another thing might be is that there's like 17 songs on this album.
Yes. Yeah, it is a long album, and according to Wikipedia, it is 77 minutes long, so it falls into what I call the 90s Metallica syndrome of, hey, we can fit almost 80 minutes on here. Let's take it all up. And I love Metallica, but I just, you know, you don't always need that. I love that with Metallica, and I love that with most of this, but yeah, it might be a bit long.
It's like, yeah, the first half is like really good. Like, I guess all the way through, like Wicked Delilah, but then those last couple songs, they all kind of just, I don't, they're all kind of maybe interchangeable to me, or I don't listen to them as much, because, yeah, the first, like, half is just, I don't know, it's got Wicked Stone, and Automatic Overdrive is pretty good, where they just keep kind of, like, kicking it up a notch each time in that song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bent to Fly was a good ballad.
Yes. It just seemed all my notes were for it was this beautiful ballad that just simply continues to grow, and like he gets higher and more and synth his vocals, very impressive. Goes back to more of what I love about Miles, just his range and ability to change it up, his style. Yeah, the last half, I don't even know that it's necessarily that I don't connect with it as well, but just maybe I get distracted by that far into an album sometimes. That I might not finish the album sometimes, unless it's a super long drive. I love Too Far Gone's good. I like Weathered Delilah a lot. I actually really dug Battleground on my most recent listen. And it's another one that accents Miles' vocals really well.
Maybe the thing is I have ADD, so I only got so far, and then I'd be like, man, I want to go back and listen to Wicked Stone again. I want to listen to it again. And then I just never got that far through the end of the album because I kept getting distracted by all these other songs that I wanted to go back to.
Right.
I think that's probably the case, too, is because there's just so much, maybe, on the first half.
Right. Well, it's easy to do sometimes that you just get so attracted to certain songs that you just want to keep going back to them.
I always do that. Like, I never listen to something all the way through, maybe as it's intended. The first time, I'll kind of be like, okay, I want to hear that single again, or I want to hear this one again, and I'll just kind of skip around.
Oh, okay. I typically, it's harder with an album this long, but I typically try to listen to an album all the way through once before I do that, but I don't always do it, and especially if it's not one that I connect with the songs, then I might just start skipping. but definitely with like 40-minute albums, I typically try to make myself go through the whole album once. I wrote down The Dissident as one that stood out this time, and I think it's because the further end of the song, maybe it would be considered a bridge or whatever, it's just kind of... I could just imagine it in a concert of just almost like a sing-along part where he has some, I can't remember if they're like shalas or I can't remember the words there, but anyway, I don't know, just certain things, you know, you hear people echo in same background concerts. It just, if you know the song, you'll know what I'm talking about. Otherwise, I'm probably just confusing people. but it, I could just imagine that being a good concert one. And has a really good guitar solo.
I think I'm going to have to go back and like check that out like right after we stop recording.
Yeah, I wish I listened to it right before we recorded so I could give a better impersonation of that. But I know it's like... you can tell it was written with kind of like that in mind like towards the end because it's got that feel of something that would translate well at a concert. But... it's a fun album, as I said. I actually think I like it better than Apocalyptic Love, but I can't really give any good reasons why other than just that I enjoy 90% of it, and it's such a long album. I think that's a pretty good bad and average for this long of an album. This is kind of cool. I didn't realize this was produced by Michael Evans. Elvis Basquette, who does a lot of the Alter Bridge stuff. That's really cool. Who did the first two? Now I'm curious.
I've got the one with me right here.
That's like Eric Valentine did Apocalyptic Love.
Yeah.
And, nope, I just clicked on the same thing again. Slash was Eric Valentine. Apparently Kid Rock must have helped produce his own, and then this Big Cliss Flores. All right. Interesting. Now I'm jumping ahead just because I'm curious.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay, the new one was Michael Elvis Basquette did it. So, wow, he's just like the main collaborator of anything related to Alter Bridge, it looks like.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He's like Miles' right-hand man in the studio.
Apparently, yeah. But yeah, sorry, I flew by this one really quick. My notes were not very detailed. It was just going off feelings as I was listening to it the other day.
I remember when this came out. I didn't go and get it from my friend's store, Shandy's, but I did go because it's like, I think back then, or I think now they've since moved all albums, everything comes out on Fridays, but I think when this one came out in 2014, they were still doing the Tuesday releases, but a lot of the local record stores, they would put stuff out on Friday if they got it in, because it used to be they'd put it out on Monday, and that used to be the big thing around here. They'd have record store parties on like Mondays or whatever. You'd be able to go in and get it. Nice. But I think I went out and got it on a Friday because I didn't want to wait, and I wanted to listen to it like right away. So I went out and I drove to like my friend's other like local store and picked it up on Friday, and then I didn't have a CD player like at work to listen to it, but I just wanted to listen to it like as soon as I got off of work, so I didn't want to wait.
Right. But,
I think I don't know if I have anything else to add other than that. Like I guess I was just super hyped. But they did put out another live album. I think they recorded it like right around when World on Fire came out, because it says, yeah, on September 25th, 2014, shortly after the release of World on Fire, they took the stage at the Roxy Theater on the Sunset Strip. And yeah, I bought the video of that, and then I bought the CD, because they didn't come packaged together. Like, you had to get them separate.
Oh, that's weird.
But yeah, I went on and got that like right when that came out, too.
Nice. Yeah, I really miss having CD stores semi-local. We lost our CD store long ago in my town, and then we just had to revolve around Walmart, and Walmart is so difficult to find stuff at these days. I think the first Hermione album I found in person there.
Yeah, I did too. That was so weird because you wouldn't expect it at Walmart because it's like an independent release, right?
Right.
And then it happened to be there of all places. It was just weird.
Yeah, but beyond that one, I really haven't found much that I've wanted in recent years. Like they'll have like, you know, top 20, top 40 kind of albums there and some random other assortment of stuff. But it's just, I look through the music section periodically, but I don't typically go to the day albums are released because I've had bad experiences with that local as far as like it either hadn't got put out yet, even if they are getting it, or it's in the wrong section because whoever does it doesn't take it seriously and doesn't do a good job. And because it wasn't popular enough to be on the, like the end rack, the end cap. So anyway, sorry, side note. I think it's awesome to have still the music store to go to, and I would totally be doing that if we had one local. But I guess
I still get stuff sometimes. Like I'll try to hit the local record shops, but I guess sometimes I don't think Best Buy has CDs anymore now.
They don't. As of July, they I don't remember what month they stopped getting new, but July they started putting it all on clearance. And the last time I went, I don't remember what month it was. I mean, it was down to just one bin of it, and it was just sad. And because they were very dependable for a while there, too. I remember getting a couple Alter Bridge albums there, and I think one of the other Tremonti albums there. And but, yeah, they just...
Yeah, because you'd get bonus tracks or something. I guess that was their way to hook you.
Right.
And but that's crazy because I bought, I guess the last CD I'll ever get at Best Buy was Miles Kennedy's album. Because I remember when that came out, he had like, I think it was three acoustic songs on there. It was just versions of what was on the full album.
Right. I was so mad that I didn't know that there was going to be a special edition at Best Buy, and I'd already pre-ordered it on Amazon. So when they announced that, I'd already ordered, and I was like, crap, that's... And I was afraid that I might not get a copy at Best Buy, and I'm glad I stuck with just my Amazon copy, because by the time I made it to the store, they had sold out, which I'm glad they, you know, I don't know how many copies that was, but I'm still glad it was popular enough, but I was just like, man, I'm I would have pre-ordered the special edition if I had known that was a thing. But anyway, sorry, side notes there. Just, me getting sidetracked again. So let's move on.
It's all relative because we were talking about more Alter Bridge albums and Miles albums.
Right.
So kind of pulled back.
That's true. That is true. But let's jump forward to this year, 2018. Living the Dream by Slash and Miles came out. And I know the one time I talked about on this show, I had... was still too new to the album to really give a whole lot of thoughts on it. But just a quick overview of it. I felt Living the Dream showcases both the hard rockin' feel and the ballad writing of both Slash and Miles and how good they've gotten together. That to me, I don't know, it feels like, I'm not going to say it's the best of it, but to me it kind of feels like almost the most cohesive album they've done. What do you think about that?
You know, the way that you say it like that actually really does make sense because, like, my favorite song, I think, or I'd have to pinpoint, is The Great Pretender, which is, like, at the end, and it's one of the ballads. Because, yeah, it does have a good balance of that, the hard rock songs and then the ballads. And I guess I never put that together until you said that, but I was – it does make sense, so –
Yeah, I just like that. I think it just has such a beautiful mixture. It doesn't overstay its welcome either. It's 12 songs, which is a great length. Like, I get mad at bands that only do 8 or 10 songs. That's just frustratingly short. But really, 12 to maybe 14 seems like the sweet spot of the perfect number of tracks. And if you want to consider other ones like just bonus tracks, that I don't know. I know that's kind of almost like a cop-out, but I love any material you can get, so that's fine. But... I don't know, 12 tracks is just a great number. And it's got so many great rockin' ones like Call of the Wild, My Antidote, Mind Your Manners, Read Between the Lines, and of course, Driving Rain, which I think has an awesome, what I would classify as a chunky riff. I don't know how to describe that, but that just, it's, you know it when you hear it, if you're a rock fan.
And yeah, because I think when we recorded the last episode, it was the day after it was released.
That sounds right.
And so I'd only heard like the three pre-release songs, but now I've gotten to hear the whole album. So it's kind of cool that we're actually hitting it now.
Oh, that is right. Dang, I don't know. I was thinking it was came out earlier than that, but I'm just getting confused with time. But yeah, it came out the 21st. So yeah, that would have been the day before we recorded. So yeah, we definitely, no wonder we didn't dive into it a whole lot.
It was your current spin, but I couldn't really come. Like, I couldn't comment on it too much.
Right, because I'd listened to, I think, the whole thing in my car that day, or maybe in my headphones once I got home. I'm not really sure. Yeah, because it was a rip one, so it probably was a mixture. So I probably already had it on my phone because of the auto rip feature with Amazon. But one I want to point out also that was quite different on it is... The One You Loved Is Gone. That to me is one of the most gorgeous songs they've done. It's kind of got a ballad feel. But it's one I actually introduced my friend Chris to, because he's not as big into metal as we are. And so I knew if I was going to hook him with something new that was a lot of hard rock, and I needed to find a more intro level one. So that's what I did for him, and he really dug it. And he's like, you guys send me the link to some of these, or you know, which tracks you first recommend. So that made me really excited, because I love introducing anybody to some new music. Lost Inside the Girl is also really ballady and really catchy.
I know Lost Inside the Girl, but I can't really pinpoint The One You Loved Is Gone, though.
Oh, okay.
I think it's still like too new or something. Like, I haven't processed it too much.
Okay. Well, I definitely recommend going back to that one.
Lost Inside the Girl.
Mm-hmm. So what else in the album stands out to you?
Well, I bought the vinyl, and it was something that I just happened to catch it. Like, I checked Facebook like as soon as I woke up, and they had just put out the pre-order, like, that day or something, and they're like, hey, the first couple hundred people that pre-order it will get like a Slash autograph on a little card or something. I was like, cool, I'll try it. I mean, I figured I was probably too late, but I pre-ordered it, and I went with the vinyl because I wasn't sure like what it was, but it said the vinyl was going to have a hardcover book, and I thought it was going to be an actual like book packaged with the album. And it said it came with, like, the CD and a poster, and then, like, there was, like, some guitar picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it finally came in the mail, it was actually, like, a gatefold album, but it was, like, done as a hardback book. So each – it was basically, like, the booklet, the CD booklet, blown up to, like, a vinyl album size. And so you could kind of flip through it like a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the back was, like, a little pouch. And they had five guitar picks with, like, S-L-A-S-H on it, and they were different colors. And then, yeah, there's a poster and a CD. But then there's even, like, a 45 of Driving Rain.
Oh, nice. I was about to ask you if it had a gun in there. That'd be kind of crazy. Thanks for entertaining my cheesy little joke.
Yeah.
Throw back to Shinedown, I just thought of staring down a barrel of 45. That should be my new thing.
It seemed like a cool package for that album, though.
Yeah. That sounds like it, yeah. Did you appreciate the Lemmy portrait in the background of the group photo?
Oh, yeah, you did mention that, so I was kind of looking forward to that, or I was looking for that first, like I flipped through it just to kind of find that. But I like how it's like, it is like the cover of the album almost does like that Marilyn Monroe kind of Andy Warhol thing.
Right.
And I like how they stick with that kind of theme throughout the book, like it's really multicolored like that.
Yeah, it's so different than the others, because like the first full-length Miles and Slash album is so like... almost like sexed up metal kind of look, because it's got the sexy angel and the sexy devil girl around a guitar and a snake and everything. So that one's got that kind of theme. Then it's almost like a collage on World on Fire. And then this one, they just have unique looks, and I like that.
Yeah. It was kind of nice that there's actually a booklet too, because I think that first one, Apocalyptic Love, was really bare bones. It's just like a picture of the guys in the band and then the album credits.
Oh, okay. Yeah, real proper booklets are kind of a thing of the past. Most of them aren't doing it anymore. Anyway, I don't want to get off on my sad tangent there. So I'm going to stop myself there. But yeah, I appreciate it. Anybody that stilts it in there. And especially if you put lyrics. That I love, because I hate having to depend on the internet to give me lyrics, because not always are they correct, and sometimes I have no clue what some singers are saying. So it's nice to be able to check.
Oh yeah, I hear you, because some of those like lyric sites, they're just updated by like a person, and I've seen wrong lyrics on there, whereas this, you're actually getting it from the source.
Right. Oh, there are so many that they get it wrong. That's one thing. Sorry, I know I mention Amazon a lot, and I promise I'm not paid by Amazon. But that'd be awesome if I was, because I would totally pawn off anything of theirs if they paid me for it. I'm just being honest. But they have a thing called X-ray lyrics on a lot of their stuff if you get it through them or listen to it on their app. That's really cool. That can be helpful as well.
Yeah, you were asking me if I still actually bought physical copies, which, yeah, I do. And I've actually done, like, I've done the iTunes thing where I bought a lot on there, because if it's a band I really, really like Miles or Slash or Alter Bridge or whatever, I want to own it and have it in my collection. But then if it's kind of a band, like, I guess I bought the last, like, Shinedown one. I had bought all their CDs, but then this one I'm like, I don't really need to spend of extra money on the CD or have the room for it or whatever. So I bought it on iTunes, but that's something you like lose though. Is like you're saying, you don't get, if they did have artwork or something, you don't get that with the download.
Right.
I've only had like one or two where you actually got a PDF of the booklet. I think it was like, I rebought the Black album and you got a PDF of the booklet. And I think like a Jimmy Eat World one came with a PDF.
Yeah. I've had a couple, but not many.
I think they all should, because it's like it wouldn't make much to just convert that to a PDF and attach it with the download.
Right, and it wouldn't cost them any money, so
yeah,
they really should do it. Any other thoughts on the album?
I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but there is something I want to say about this Living the Dream album.
Okay.
Is that I think I might like Slash and Miles more than Alter Bridge, and Slash and Miles even more than Guns N' Roses, which probably is like making people's heads explode if they're listening. But I don't know. It's just something about those guys together and then their chemistry and then the band and how Miles can like – he can tackle the Guns N' Roses songs, and then they even have – I think their bass player, is it Todd Kearns? He like does a couple songs too during the show.
I know he's one of the members. I'm not sure what he plays.
Yeah, he's bass. He's done the Dr. Alibi, like the Lemmy song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he might have done Welcome to the Jungle when they do that live. And so after seeing him and listening to him on CD and kind of getting into it, as the band is progressing, I was like, I really like those guys together. And so I guess what I was thinking is like, man, now Slash is back with Guns N' Roses. is this going to be, are they going to be done? Is he going to keep working with Axl and they're going to put out new music? So I kind of thought Slash and Miles might have been retired and you didn't hear anything out of those guys. Because I guess, well, Miles was with Alter Bridge about the whole time that tour was going on. So I guess in my head, maybe I went too far and I thought, man, these guys are probably done. Like, you know, it was probably just a side project for him.
Right.
He's got the main band. So,
you know, about like before they announced Living the Dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I thought for sure like Slash and Miles was like retired and then all of a sudden they announced like a new album and there was like Driving Rain. And I think maybe I hadn't like checked, like I hadn't kept up with the news. And I think one day on Instagram, I follow that Brent Fitz on there and I follow Todd Kearns, the other two guys in the band.
Mm-hmm.
I follow them on Instagram and all of a sudden one day I saw one of their posts like, hey, we're in the studio. And I'm like, oh my God, yes, they're back. I was just so like giddy because I'm like, yes, it's not over.
Right. Yeah. I didn't know either. Where I was happy there was a bigger break in between Slash albums this time around. That way Miles finally was able to put out a solo album, because that's the reason why he didn't put out his first solo album, or at least that's the reason he gave. I personally wonder if he was not as happy with it and was sitting on it a little bit for that as well, but he was given such like little bit of breaks between Alter Bridge and Slash Tour, and so there wouldn't have been much time to tour it if he'd put it out. But anyway, like this, like, because it was just so wham-bam, like you got 2011 Alter Bridge, 2012 Slash, 2013 Alter Bridge, 2014 Slash. So it was like no break in there to do solo and side stuff. I mean, you got to have some family time. I know he's married. So yeah, it was nice that they had time this time around, but I had wondered, was it done? And I'm very glad it's not. And I hope it's, from what interviews I've heard, they enjoy playing together. So I think that's going to keep going for a long time. And I hope it does.
Yes. Makes me happy.
Now, I can't go as far with you on the liking it better than Alter Bridge. I am far from there. My head kind of exploded. My heart stopped beating for a second there. I almost ended the phone call. No. No, I...
You're fired. Nobody's ever going to hear this.
Right. This is just for us. This is over. No. No, it definitely caught me off guard. I can't go nearly that extreme, but I'm glad you're that passionate about it. And I feel once I see him live, I will feel even more passionately about it. But my love for Mark Tremonti and all the stuff he touches, I think I will always love Alter Bridge better than this. But
Then maybe you're more of like a Tremonti guy.
I'm
more Miles guy. I don't know.
I love Miles' voice and I love what he adds guitar wise, but I don't know. I just, something about Tremonti's playing just hits with me. And it helps that I've seen him so much between Creed, between Alter Bridge, and then the two solo shows I've gone to. And I will say I've not had a chance to meet Miles yet, where I've met Mark twice. So that could be it. And I was actually already wondering that because I definitely, when we talk, it seems like I'm more into the Tremonti stuff. So that could be it. I don't know. But, guys, I just want to say thank you for listening to the episode again. Once again, I can't tell you for sure what's coming out next, but the show's going to continue. I just got to get better at planning, and one of these days, maybe I will. I don't know. But I think if I wanted to give a theme for this episode, I just want to say check out new stuff. Don't be closed off to new music. Don't think that you only got to stick to what you're comfortable with. Give things a chance. I want to recommend to anybody to, if you are passionate about a band, send me their name. Tell me about them. I will check out any recommendations. Now, I mean, if the first couple tracks by them don't hit me, I might not continue, but I will check out, you know, pretty much anything. So maybe better than just a name of a group, you know, tell me a song in particular that hits you, that connects with you. I'm always up for listening to new music and finding new stuff and different stuff too. So, yeah, that's kind of a sub heading of this episode, was just a lot of new music and some new experiences. I just wanted to kind of highlight. Andy, anything? I know you've got Survey Says. What have y'all done recently?
Well, we've got a new episode for November that's coming out. It'll be we dove into our first Clash of the Champions. It was kind of a show that WCW did that was kind of in between the pay-per-views that they'd have, like, I guess bi-monthly. So they had like a Clash of the Champions in between. And the one we picked was a November show from 1989 with Terry Funk and Ric Flair in the main event. So if you want to listen to some wrestling, that'll be coming out very soon, or it might be out already.
Awesome. Yeah, I imagine a lot of the people listening to this show probably listen to the wrestling stuff. I definitely know several of the listeners are wrestling fans, so I'm sure they will. As of this moment, this is the only show I've been on recently, so I definitely encourage you to check, dig into the back ones if you haven't heard some of the other episodes, because I've, like I said, this is my 14th one, and luckily, at least on Podbean, all of our episodes are still on there. I was going to recently post all of them on Twitter. I haven't gotten around to that yet, though. But definitely, like I said, reach out if you listen. Give me feedback. Let me know how I'm doing. Let me know what you like. And listen to more shows on the Pop Feed. I know that's the part I'm part of, and I'm friends with a big chunk of the guys. Hearts of Heaven Fanboys just did an episode on Black Panther. That was a very fun and one of the most off-topic episodes they've done in a while. But as I've discussed with a lot of people, that's sometimes my favorite things. I love just funny stories and stuff. And there's Talking Pop with Jenny and Tim, the other half of Survey Says. Jenny's got her horror podcast, Freak Out Drive-In. I was very much enjoying listening to her and Stacy talk about Scream, which is one of my favorite horror movies. What am I missing? Marvel Age, Marvel Age Masterclass, if you're into comics. DC Post-Crisis Management. Russell gets a different guest every month. And, Songs with Friends. They just posted a new episode. Well, it'll be up for several days when you hear this. But anyway, they got a new episode. They're Steve and Kelly are always a lot of fun. And I was really flattered. Not too long ago, they referred to me as the music guru on their show. And I was like, what? I don't think I'm a music guru, but I was happy for the shout-out. So please check them out. They dive into two songs each episode, and it's a lot of fun. So, Geek and Sassy. Sorry, I'm friends with them, and I really want to. I think they have a new one coming out. I think they just recorded the other day, so it'll be out by the time this is up, too. So give them a check out. I think they got Greg. Yeah, that's inside information, but yeah, they just had Greg on. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll catch y'all down the road.